Welcome to the Equal Giving Circle podcast, The Sharing Culture, the show that talks about sharing, who does it, why, and the history, and a whole lot in between. Each episode is a stewarded conversation by one of our team members and another community organizer or community member. We hope that you enjoy these conversations about sharing and are inspired to lean in and explore your own relationship with sharing and are called to stretch and build deeper alongside of us. We look forward to sharing with you. Welcome, welcome, everybody, to our episode of The Sharing Culture today. This is AJ McCrary, one of our co-founders and executive director of Equal Giving Circle, and I am here today with one of our board members, founding board member, Keen Talton Davis. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. Hello, everyone.
Yeah, I'm super excited. Today, we're going to chat a little bit about the history of sharing and different kinds of ways that sharing shows up in our community and the Black culture, just looking back in time. And both of us are historians. Somebody the other day called me a community historian, and I was like, ooh, I like that. Because I'm a little more all over the place. Yeah. And my history work definitely comes up in storytelling and through my work at EGC and like mutual aid and my art.
Right.
You do a lot of art history.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a lot of amazing murals around town.
I like to think so.
I got to see the mural at the Portland building the other day. It's really beautiful. Mm-hmm. I hadn't seen it in a while, like since it was first installed. So it was cool to see it. I do think they need to adjust the lighting because that.
Yeah, I got to get on them about that. It's supposed to stay lit 24/7.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't quite lit there when I was there. Mm-hmm. We were watching city council on a screen or whatever. So maybe that's why on a teeny tiny, it felt like a classroom, you know, back in the day when the teacher would roll
the AV cart.
Yeah, it was giving that. So the room was pretty dim. So I can't like say that it, I don't know what it looked like outside of that kind of programming, but it was cool to see it. You've got the towers on Alberta, the walking tour on Williams. What else you got?
North Portland Library.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I actually haven't seen it.
Yes.
I feel bad. Because there's a lot of cool. Latoya Lovely has art in there. Something was going on the day of the opening, but I am excited to check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you see it?
Yes.
It's good.
It was so super exciting to see it. Just having that element of what's really cool about it is that you don't really see it when you're in the main portion of the library. Mm-hmm. But then as soon as you start peeking around the corner, you see this explosion of like color and photographs and the gold glinting. And it just makes you very curious about what it means to enter into that Black cultural center that's over there.
Yeah, I got to get over there. I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, very excited. I grew up in that library.
Exactly. So. Right? Like African dance classes, lectures, all kinds of things have happened in that library. As well as, you know, having mentors that were librarians there for me, like Chris Poole Jones, right, who's sadly passed. Yeah. But my goodness, the amount of information, not only in the library, but in the people who were there.
Of the libraries in Portland, that is my favorite. Just like the building, the vibe, the people.
Yeah.
And I like that the kids section there is like prominent up front. That always makes me smile.
Yeah.
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 Well, I'm excited about that. Yeah. So you've got a lot of amazing art projects from all around town that you've done. You weave history, Black history, into everything that you do and touch, which is really beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah.
And your education background is in engineering.
Yes. Mechanical engineering, the jack of all trades.
Yes. But you've got a really powerful brain that like connects all the things. It's fun to learn from you and to organize with you.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It's definitely, I wouldn't say it's the reason I went into engineering, but it's definitely one of the things that came out of my experience going to school as an engineer is just realizing that I had to share, right? Mm-hmm. Like I went into it thinking that I was going to be this prosthetics designer for kids when at the core of it was really about making kids who maybe weren't represented, especially black and brown kids who were not represented regularly in any kind of way, feel whole, mm-hmm. right? And that just kind of that piece of making community and underrepresented folks feel whole has just been a continual thread. Like that's my thing.
Yeah.
And bringing joy into that space.
Yeah. Your art is very joyful, which I love.
Yeah.
I love to see it. Joy, Lisa, and I the other day were talking about creating a club because Joy is her first name mm-hmm. and my middle name. And we have another friend named Joyce. And so we were talking about creating a joy club. Unrelated to the podcast yes, or this conversation, okay. really. But joy is a vibe and we love to see it in it all is. The places and leaning into it.
Well, my name means celebrate it. Can we celebrate?
Yeah, maybe we'll have to create a club where like your name has to mean something mm-hmm.
positive. Yes.
Has to be like a positive action.
Yes, yes, yes.
Oh my gosh. That would be fun even just as like a party vibe. Like you have yep. to, you have to, you only can be invited if you're
that's right.
A little exclusionary and problematic.
Well, yeah. Name tag. What does your name mean? Celebrated and long awaited defender of mankind. That's literally what my name means.
I think that's really powerful though. My name means beautiful happiness.
Yeah.
Yeah. And those are definitely the way I like to move the world, making mm-hmm. things beautiful. And even though like many people meet me in serious ways, like if I'm not laughing, I really don't want to be there.
Right.
If it's not joyful and fun, like, ugh.
Right. And sometimes you have to do the serious, heavy stuff to get to the joy, right? To make yeah. space for joy. Like, let's do these things so that there can be more joy. Mm-hmm. Let's move the stupid stuff out of the way. Make space for more joy and celebration.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah. As an organizer, I do live in a lot more joy than like most people get mm-hmm. to know or see, which I find really funny. Cause like yeah. people know me in like an organizer space, mm-hmm. like we're getting something done, we're being serious. But if you like spend time with me in my personal space, it's like a whole different,
yeah.
It's all just about kicking and laughing. Like I'm literally yeah. otherwise I'll be like, I'm going to go home. One of my favorite activities, laughing. All right, I'm going to ask you a couple questions as we just like get into this mm-hmm. conversation. These are our season's questions. So when I say the word sharing, what are the first thoughts that come to mind?
Is caring. Sharing is caring.
Mm.
That's kind of our household thing with the toddler right now. Sharing is caring. Because so often, you know, when we have something to share and we can share it, the ability to do that, especially if it's something that we love and enjoy, then we can then share not only that thing, but also that love and joy and happiness that it can bring, right? So you're not just making whatever that is smaller or having space away from it, but you're now multiplying love and joy in the world, mm. right? And so that says that you're important enough that I want to see you happy or that you should be happy, right? So how do you, you know, I tend to talk in questions. How do you create opportunities of caring, right?
Yeah.
How do you create opportunities of caring, of sharing, and where do they overlap and how do you grow them?
Mm, how do you grow them? Mm-hmm. My dad would say you have to talk to them.
Yep. Hey.
You got to talk. You got to talk. I love that. Sharing is caring. Absolutely. What is one of your favorite memories around sharing?
I got to think on that one. I'm not sure. I haven't thought about it in a while.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I love that you are teaching a toddler yeah. to share right now, though. That's going to make me smile.
Yeah. And he's really generous. I think now that I'm thinking about it, I think for, you know, a lot of the stuff that you just mentioned, right, about the art and history mm-hmm. and sharing history through art and using that as a tool to communicate. It's sharing, you know, it's sharing, mm-hmm. it's sharing history, it's sharing joy, it's sharing hope, mm-hmm. it's sharing dreams. And it is by making it art and making it permanent public art in many ways, or any of the other ways that I create and disperse art. It is that sharing of possibilities, right? Mm. Like I just did a presentation Monday night about Black joy and Black space. And it was, I think it's called a Pecha Kucha or Kucha Pecha. I'm not quite sure. But it's a 20 slides and it's 20 seconds each.
Okay.
And so I was under the impression and understanding that you can put words on it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So there's 20 slides of nothing but, well, except for two, Black joy, Black history. These are all archival images and current day images of Black community of Portland.
Mm.
And so being able to share that, right, which is perhaps very different than sharing other things, right, sharing a thing, a physical object, but sharing about community and about history and sharing in the planning of the future, right? Opening up that space to be able to say, again, you're important enough to involve in this, you're important enough that I want to hear it from you, I want to hear your hopes and dreams, I want to know what you think this should be, because again, that sharing and that creation.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, I like that.
Yeah,
I like this idea of like sharing in the future planning. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
We talk about like the future in so many different ways, but sharing in that reimagining, that dreaming up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's super special.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Ooh. What do you think needs to happen to change our collective relationship with sharing?
I think a couple things. I think another kind of thing that I've been thinking about lately is that we can do hard things, mm-hmm. right? And sometimes that hard thing is recognizing the different ways that things can be shared, what can be shared, and what the impact is on any and all of us, right? And realizing there is abundance.
Say that again.
There is abundance, right? But we have to be able to look at how that abundance is shared. Are we getting the people who need to share in that abundance to the abundance?
Yeah. I mean, that'll be the work of our time right now, our generation, yeah. For sure. Ooh.
Yeah. Right?
That's a lot.
It is. It's a big lift, right? We can do hard things.
Well, we definitely can. And we are definitely in a season where we need people to expand their capacity and stop sort of copying out to this notion that they can't do hard things.
Yeah.
It's too hard or it's too big. When that's, our imaginations are endless. And,
yeah.
And we need to like uplift that reality in real life that like, this all that we experience was dreamed up by somebody
mm-hmm.
with a bad imagination. So we need to really lean into our imaginations and,
yeah.
and dream something up that's different.
Yes.
And implement it
mm-hmm.
and practice it.
Right.
Today. Because we do live in abundance.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't steward abundance well.
Right.
Ooh, well, I love that. I'm really fascinated just to hear like, always how people think and feel about sharing and like the different things that brings up.
Mm-hmm.
And that really kind of leads us into the bulk of our conversation today, which is sharing in history, which yes. we already talked about. We're both historians. This is, which is exciting for us to like come and like have this historian mm-hmm. chat. This is like my academic yes, thing yes. of my week. not really. So, from a historical standpoint, I just want to like set the tone. The Black community, the African diaspora truly has had to share as a for survival
mm-hmm.
as and you see sharing in a lot of ways throughout our community and culture and from the jump goes back to the continent, but all throughout the Americas and the West, all these places that we've mm-hmm. been dragged to and that we are still at. So sharing is a big part of our culture, but we don't really talk about it as sharing specific. Like, we don't say it in that way.
Yeah.
And I'll use, you know, one some of the EGC box as an example. While we deliver to 225 households, we know that those boxes go beyond 225 households. Mm-hmm. There's an elder in Northeast Portland who, when she gets her box, she takes out a couple items and then she brings stuff. And at this point, she knows what these two other elders
yep.
like. And she separates her box into bags. And so it goes mm-hmm. to her house and then these other two houses. And then her sons occasionally come by. And they're always asking me and asking her about what you got for me in the box. Or so that one box, that 25 pounds of produce mm-hmm. is distributed to 3 to 4 households a week.
There goes that abundance.
Yeah. And it's shared in this meaningful mm-hmm. and impactful way. And so it really is ingrained in our community. And when I've talked to that elder about it, she just shrugs it off of, why would I? I'm as one individual, I'm not going to eat all of this. So why mm-hmm. would I not share it? And her relationship with, of course I would share it. Of course this is like required. Right. And that for me always reminds me different of Western societies where if you have an empty cup or if your cup is low, you can't share, you got to rest. This whole like idea of rest and self-preservation, where much in collective societies or the global South, if I have a little bit of my cup, it doesn't have to be full, but I'm going to share because it'd be mm-hmm. better that you and I both have something mm-hmm. than me having what I have and you having nothing. Mm-hmm. And so it is very much ingrained in our community. And I'm interested just in us talking a little bit about like some different periods of times in history that how sharing showed up and how we collectively share and what that looks like today. So I'm very curious. So we talked a little bit about how, I mean, in chattel slavery,
yeah.
people required to share, people had and this also shows up in how family relationships is different within our community, right? Where it's like community cousins, kin looks slightly different because of that history of having to be, you know, sharing and just being mindful of like kids being or family members being sold and taken mm-hmm. away. And so people also received other people very quickly and shared resources that they had in whatever plantation setting that they were on and were very resourceful in terms of whatever kind of little gardening they could do, gathering, or if they were allowed to hunt at all or fish, mm-hmm. and then would share those kinds of things right. with whoever, and was very, you know, mindful of that. And so we see in that time period of chattel slavery that people absolutely were sharing basic resources and even sharing themselves in ways, right? Like mothering children that weren't theirs, mothering, mm-hmm. Beyond mothering, but just like caregiving and showing up for people. I don't think that we like collectively really talk about that and hold that part of the survival experience for enslaved people up mm-hmm. high, that like their survival was really deeply tied to their ability to share. Mm-hmm. And then, but from there, we see other parts of history. Before we got started, you mentioned sharecropping. Mm-hmm. And so you want to tell us a little bit about sharing in that time period?
Yeah. So I was telling you, as we were just kind of going over topics and possibilities, my grandmother grew up in Texas on a sharecropping farm. Her family was sharecroppers. And... you know, she and I had talked about it at different points in time, but after she passed, I had her journal that she had kept and was writing down just different stories about her experiences. And for her as a child on the farm, you know, she had all of her responsibilities and all the things that they did. But to understand from as that adult perspective of we were poor, mm-hmm. right? But never feeling that way. And that's such a sentiment that you hear in community, right? Mm-hmm. Folks didn't know they were poor until they grew up and reflected upon seeing the bigger picture, seeing where they are now. But in that, You know, she was in her journal, she was talking about how they always had their garden, right? Their own personal garden. They raised livestock and they had all these different things and they had different skills, mm-hmm. right? And I think that's one of those things that is such a tradition of sharing for many, right? Is craft. It goes back to one of those, it's a non-physical thing, mm-hmm. but it is such an important component, right? It is knowing how to make quilts, knowing how to, as you just mentioned, fish, right? Mm-hmm. Like, how can you do something that can support your family and your community? Like, if I can make a great quilt, but I don't know how to cook, guess what I'm going to be doing, right? I'm going to be exchanging quilts for some cooking, mm-hmm. for some food, right? Why wouldn't I? Why would I try to force myself to do something that I am not skilled at? Like, obviously, you got to know your basics, right, for cooking, but something like that. Or if I don't know how to sew, but I'm an excellent cook, or I am able to have this bountiful garden, then that's what I'm going to do. We're going to have some exchange. But basically, it was just the thought and the stories about community, being in community, right? And that's one way we talk about, you know, the community kids, the aunties, the uncles. We're in community. That's how we talk about sharing, mm-hmm. right? That's just part of it. That is that village that always gets referenced.
But that's being in community. And I want to highlight that, yeah. like, these are relationships where people are having FaceTime. Because I think right now we have a lot of that word is thrown around, mm-hmm. and it's been co-opted in ways and doesn't really have a weight.
Right.
But like for me, when I say I'm in community with people, it's I see them fairly, yep. not necessarily every day or even every week, but I mm-hmm. see them regularly. We spend time together. If I call them or they call me, we're picking up the phone. Like, unless.
Yeah.
But I'm going to text or be like, I'm going to call you right back, or right. I am going to get back to you. We have a reciprocal relationship, and mm-hmm. doesn't always mean the same thing, right? For example, you regularly give me rides. That's not how I show up for you.
Right.
I don't drive.
Right.
But it's like, right. but I recognize like this is part of like our relationship, yeah. and give and take, right? Yep. Like, and I think that word, there's a lot of, it's just a word for people, and it's not, this is an action.
Right.
And if you're in community and I can say, oh yeah, these are her kids or like my nieces and nephews, it's because we have an actual reciprocal relationship, right. Where it'd be weird if I just saw some kid at the grocery store and I said, that's my new nephew.
Right. Yeah, no.
That's strange because I don't know them, but the community really is about knowing each other and sharing. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be like, I know everything about you, but
right.
we have a relationship. We talk, we're engaged, and there's some level of accountability
mm-hmm.
and care.
Right.
Like, I don't want you to be hungry.
Right.
I don't want you to not have a ride.
Mm-hmm.
And exactly. That, you know, I think that's like, as we're talking about community and people are trying right now looking for community, mm-hmm. it's like, you got to build relationships. You got to talk to people.
Yes.
And it takes some time because we're also not in the space where like we're thrown essentially, you know, a plantation is a jail. So mm-hmm. we're thrown into this and we've expanded a little bit about right. past that. So we have to be more thoughtful in the ways that, because it's not as instantaneous.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's, you know, I think those are some of those key words, right? It's reciprocity.
Mm-hmm.
It's intentionality. Mm-hmm. It's responsibility
mm-hmm.
and integrity, right?
Yeah.
All those E's. But some of those are those really basic building blocks of truly having a true community, not just people who have some kind, who live in the same area, right? Because that's so often what gets called. Yeah. Or people who have one or two things that they agree with. Oh, it's a community of this, a community of that. But to be in community is exactly the stuff you're talking about.
Yeah.
Right. And so for just kind of going back to my grandmother, like seeing her as myself, seeing her as an adult, and thinking about the garden that she had when she moved up here, right? Like, she was able to, get land. Like, that was the first thing that she wanted to do when she got up here, after having, you know, children and being married, was get some land. And that was kind of that big push that a lot of folks did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because when you've been a sharecropper and you do have your own land, it really means something.
Yeah.
I mean, it means something regardless, but the ability to determine the way you want to do things and having that ownership coming out of, even if you didn't know that you were poor as a child or that you were in whatever situation, having the ability to not have some of the same issues that you saw your parents having,
mm-hmm.
with having to talk to somebody for permission to do something, is a whole different structure.
Yeah.
Whole different structure. And so growing up, she had this, for me, you know, I always saw her, this massive garden. Like, it was literally a lot. It was a city lot that was a garden. She had a mini farm, an urban farm, back in the 80s and the 90s. And she knew how to grow stuff. And 90% of it went somewhere else.
She shared it.
She shared it. She taught us. And then she shared everything else, right? So I remember as a kid, planting peas, shucking peas, corn, like all the vegetables,
mm-hmm.
right? And then seeing that, oh, that's set aside for so-and-so, that's for so-and-so. Oh, yep, that's going to so-and-so's house, right? Like, there was a neighborhood of folks, plus family members, that were able to get fresh fruits and vegetables off of her garden.
Yeah. I think it's interesting to think, too, about how prominent gardening is within the Black community, mm-hmm. especially as we've moved away from, like, sharecropping and Reconstruction yep. and Jim Crow, and it keeps going. But there's always these stories of gardening as a way to share resources, to be more, you know, sovereign, mm-hmm. to be able to be more self-sufficient. It's more reliable to be right. like, I'm a bet on us doing this work than, like, hopefully yeah. this other, you know, whether it's the grocery store or what have you. And I think it's really fascinating because, like, I know so many of our elders who have had these, like, prominent gardening mm-hmm. experiences. My dad used to have a garden behind his office when I was a kid, and he would share produce with his clients, with everybody.
Right.
Like, I used to go there just to eat tomatoes. Like, I was
literally... I can't tell you how many of other people's tomatoes and zucchini I have had, right? Because it's an abundance. There's that word again, right?
Yeah. Miss Linda out in, she was on our podcast last year in New Rochelle. She started her garden work really just because she saw a need. She gardened mm-hmm. in her home and was feeding. She's not a single mom, never been a single mom, wasn't raised by a single mom, but she, like, recognizes that's, like, a real a hard experience. And she was feeding all the single moms in her neighborhood because she wanted them to have good nutrition and those babes to be yeah. accessing produce. Now she has, like, rooftop farms in New Rochelle. She's, like, leading the way mm-hmm. in New York on urban farming and food access in an absolutely incredible way. I really yeah. want to bring her out here and have her.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah. We need some more money. You listening? Write us a check. not just for to bring Miss Linda out here, because we want to feed more people.
Yes.
We want a building that has a yard that we could garden in.
Absolutely.
But it just... gardening and sharing is just so prominent, and it shows up, right? And mm-hmm. in ways that, like, your grandmother wasn't organizing this garden out of, like, I have to feed the neighborhood.
Right.
She's just like, this is what we do, and I have extra
mm-hmm.
and I'm gonna share.
Right.
And it's so beautiful how within our community sharing is so organic and normal.
Mm-hmm.
One of the babes that we interviewed a while ago was like, I've always known how to share.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I came here knowing how to share, and I was like, oh,
well, all right.
Okay. All right. So this isn't our DNA.
Yes.
I love how that age, like 7, 8, is like,
oh yes,
I know all the things. I'm really, it's fun. That's just really beautiful though, that, like, the way that your grandmother showed up for community and just instilled those values.
Yeah.
And without it even being like a big thing, this is just...
This is what we do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's that matter of factness, right? That why would you do something different? You know, why would you not, if you have the resources, if you have the time and you actually enjoy doing these things, why wouldn't you?
Yeah. Well, and I think it's like that is the way that we're supposed to be, right? Mm-hmm. Like for me, sharing brings up a sense of peace and like nourishment that like if I'm being stingy, I don't get. Mm-hmm. And I think that like, well, I know that capitalism and colonialism has pushed us away from, from the center of sharing and this collective care. And I can tell physically how much that disrupts my own self. And, you know, if I'm being intentional sharing versus if I'm like, well, I don't want to go or I don't want to do that or they can't have that. It feels a certain kind of way.
Yeah.
So it's always fascinating that like these are things that our ancestors, they've been knowing. And that if sometimes getting lost in this modern colonial hellscape that we live in.
Yeah. And I think it's important to remember too, right? Like, as we are sharing, right? And it goes back to that reciprocity, right? Because even thinking about, you know, when you mentioned when your cup is low, right? Mm-hmm. And we still share. When that cup is low and somebody has a full cup, there is that need to continue to share, right? Like it's not just expecting the same person to share over and over again. Mm-hmm. It's sharing in the sharing, right?
Yeah.
It's saying, okay, it's time for you to rest. Let me share in the work that you're doing to make your work lighter. It's sharing in the load. It's sharing in the administrative part, right?
Yeah.
The lift part, right? Mm-hmm. It's, we all can feel good when we share the fun stuff with each other, but sometimes that sharing is the work that has to happen.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, like when we are thinking about this from like a community standpoint, a collective, right? When there's multiple people carrying the burden or the hard thing, it is easier for me to take a rest because there's still other people carrying it. And that's like right now as we're talking about community and building and just sort of the landscape of all the things and the federal government being a hot, I mean, it's always been a hot, ignorant mess, but it's real sloppy now. It's got just crumbs everywhere. Not in a good way. But as we see this, we do need people that are like, we have to give people a break, but we have to like hold this together. We have to hold up the work, the community. And we're doing this as a collective. It is easier for one person to pause, take a rest, have a nap, and come back. And I think that for me, whenever we're talking about rest and social justice work or civil rights kind of work, yes, rest is important. But we need to be mindful that it doesn't look like I rest for 8 years and I come back when I feel rejuvenated. Mm-hmm. I rest while other people are doing, and then I tap back in and then I give them a break. And so I think, I'm fascinated with like the relationship where like, or the messaging right now around rest, where it's like, it should be a temporary rest. Like, go take a nap and come back. Cause we do need each other to build. And if you tap out indefinitely, that means these other people don't get a tap out. Mm-hmm. And then I do really think that we have to like stretch our capacity in general. I might have traumatized somebody with saying they were talking about rest the other day. And I was like, I don't think enslaved people ever got a rest. So like we could chill out with all that in their face. But it's how I feel. Like our ancestors weren't out here talking about, let me take a break. I need to go on a retreat. That's just, you know, they was grinding and trying to like pushing for survival and pushing like in the ways that they could towards liberation. And so thinking of that spirit, like, take your nap or like take the weekend off, but she better be ready to go Monday, honey. Like, let's That's not where we're at. We're in the action part of the story. I keep saying that, which does not, it's not rest time. Yeah. It's just not.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that and hear that. Just because there are so many different pieces, right? It's about stepping up and stepping in. Mm-hmm. Right? Because there are people who have, you know, like yourself, you know, you've been doing this EGC specifically since 2020.
Yeah, actually 2019.
Yeah. Right. I remember the groundwork. Yeah. What you were laying back then. So, like, at what point do you regenerate? I think it's not even necessarily about the rest, right? Rest is important because that's when you regenerate. So, mm-hmm. really, how and in what ways are you regenerating? Or are you just stepping away? Right?
Yeah.
And that's two different things.
Yeah.
That's two different things. Regenerating means that you are going away for or resting for a moment to regenerate and recreate and move towards the same goals, new goals, whatever it is that you need to resituate yourself so that you can continue the work, right? And me, I'm all about, well, let me recruit somebody, right? Like, how can I find more people to do this and make this easier for everybody?
Yeah, super into that. Part of it right now that I notice is that we need more people to step up and even try, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we've got too many people that are, they've just decided that this is, the world is hard and their capacity is only so much. But, like, the human spirit is pretty strong
and
can be stretched. And so, yes, I'm like, team, let me have a rest, but we need y'all to show up with your dollars and your time and be consistent.
Exactly.
So that can happen. And I will say, like, I cannot stand when people are like, AJ, how do you do it? I just do it. That's how. I just do it. Maybe I saw too many of that Nike commercial. Nike, you should send us money. Just like my dad was giving shout outs to some random ass corporations. They should send us money too. but you just do it. I don't know. Yeah. Like, I'm always so agitated when people are like, but how? Like, how are you not?
Yeah.
Do you not see all of these things that are happening? I get tired too, and I absolutely do sleep and rest. Mm-hmm. Somebody asked me the other day, I'm like, call me on a random Wednesday afternoon. I'll probably be taking a nap.
Yeah.
I might be working later in the evening. I might be working on Saturday. Yep. But, like, I do find times to, you know, to have that downtime. But and rest is important. But, like, we just have to do it. And mm-hmm. our ancestors, in my opinion, truly went through worse things. And so, yeah, we just got to do it.
Right. You know, recently I saw a poem, and I'll dig it up. And it was talking about a woman. It was a woman who was saying she didn't want to be her ancestors' wildest dreams. She wanted to be their quiet ones, their dreams of rest, their dreams of safety, their dreams of, you know, those quiet, mm-hmm. those quiet hopes that you cling to. And I just thought that was really a beautiful way to approach that, right?
Yeah.
Like, obviously, like, some, there are things that we're doing they would have never dreamt of, right? But how do you relate to that, right? How do you relate to thinking in that context of what are those quiet dreams that you hold the closest to your heart, right? Yeah. About life, about people, about community, any of those that you almost dare not say out loud.
But see, to explore those things, you, one, have to get familiar with history.
Yep.
I love that Mr. Kent Ford always will tell people, you can't know your future if you don't know your past.
Yep.
And then he'll tell you all about the past. Mm-hmm. And it'll be a delightful lesson.
Yes.
He's a great storyteller.
He is.
And I appreciate, though, that, like, to answer, even to sit with those questions, you really do have to sit with what was it like for our ancestors, whether it was during chattel slavery, mm-hmm. during being a sharecropper, which, as you mentioned earlier, was a time in history that was a real,
yeah,
that was a really rough time. But we do kind of just skip right over it.
Yep.
it's not really mentioned. But that was a really significant time where people were still very much experiencing a lot of harm and oppression.
Yep.
And they were stuck.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was really one of these rock and a hard places. So it was just a real continuum of
right.
the previous harm. But to really be able to think about what were my ancestors' wildest mm-hmm. dreams, or what were their quiet hopes or wishes, or, you know, those kinds of feelings, we have to really sit with history and unpack and really learn about the different experiences.
You're right.
And we can't just romanticize, you know, a few figureheads. We have to really get into the weeds of what was it mm-hmm. like for individuals? What were they going through? What did they have or didn't have?
Right.
And throughout it, right? And like, even thinking about like Reconstruction and, mm-hmm. and Jim Crow and the Civil Rights Movement, right? Like, these are all separate chunks of history that were a separate, often carrying the same fuckery and oppression and harm,
mm-hmm.
but then bringing on new harm, right?
Right?
Like, think about Jim Crow era, and they started to ban every, you know, no loitering, no foraging.
Mm-hmm.
That's where our no foraging laws, because that's why we don't know that you can make Sprite out of pine needles.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Pretty tasty. Weird, like, in our modern thing,
yes.
but like very cool and pretty tasty. You know, where we don't know what mushrooms that are safe and not mm-hmm. safe, because foraging
right.
was outlawed, and foraging and hunting, fishing were ways that our ancestors did survive, right? And
mm-hmm.
that was very much an important part of survival. And then that was taken away.
Yep.
And if you were caught doing any of those things, now off to jail, back to the plantation.
Yep.
You go.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I think it is really important to like really sit with what our ancestors and even our elders were dealing
yeah.
with.
Yeah.
Because when people now talk about it so bad, there's fucked up shit happening all around,
uh-huh.
and things are bad. They were worse.
They were.
Tragically.
Right. And that's the thought, too, is like, after, you know, in this like current political climate, there have been so many people who have just said, you know, they were stressing, but then there was a community elder who pulled them to the side and said, we've been doing this work. We know how to get through this.
Yeah.
We know how to get through this. This is just, it's just another iteration.
Yeah. But we know how to get through this through community, right?
Yeah.
You think about like the way that people would open their homes to children that weren't their biological
mm-hmm.
children, and that they were, would raise them, right? Even the way that they would ask. I had this conversation with Mr. Richard Brown a couple months ago, and some young person had popped off on him, and he was like, oh, about, because he'd said, hey, who are your people? And they were
yeah.
like, that's rude. And he was like, no, it's not.
Not
and
at all.
it was wild. And so all that happened, and you know how sometimes we just be sensitive for no reason,
yeah.
whatever. So then after all that happened, and he was very bewildered, we were talking about that and just where that phrase actually comes from, right?
Right.
That comes from when the time of chattel slavery, when we'd ask, who are your people? So then I could report back.
Yep.
And it was also really special and sacred to be a person carrying a message.
Mm-hmm.
And you made sure that you gave that message
right.
to whoever, at least let somebody know in case something happened to you. And it was just like a really interesting, like thinking about even that as a survival tactic.
Yep.
And like being a messenger is this aspect of sharing and carrying messages being really important. And the way that like we don't have this understanding of some of these cultural practices or where those came from.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was so interesting because he was just the whole dynamic of it. And that got me thinking about what cultural practices are we losing or do we not celebrate? And
yeah.
working on another project around that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's like a really interesting, like how these things allowed us to survive.
Yes.
An uplifted community. And these are all part of that. And they are all rooted in sharing, right? Mm-hmm. Like sharing information, sharing resources. And when we talk about civil rights and we talk about history, we don't often really kind of get into the weeds of like, well, these are the ways that things survive, right?
Right.
We always, not just us, but the world always talks about Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks. Absolutely incredible icons. Mm-hmm. Did a lot. Amazing. Who paid for that?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
In order to be a leader, you have to have...
Who's backing this? Who's supporting it, right? Yeah. Georgia Gilmore is just getting a little bit of shine. She's been talked about in quite a different few spaces this Black mm-hmm. History Month, which is cool. I found a children's book about okay. her. And she's the Black woman who was selling plates, feeding mm-hmm. the community, both those that just needed food, but also she was selling plates and got other women to sell plates to help fund the boycott,
right.
And you know, rides, gas, all the other things, getting people out of jail, mm-hmm. attorneys, yep. blah blah blah. And so we don't think about, yeah, like how did these things happen, right? Like how, when we think about how people push for liberation, right, that was, there was some class solidarity that was happening, even though we didn't call it class solidarity, but mm-hmm. there were, you know, free people who were like, this is wrong. And they were also typically not wealthy.
Right.
Who helped both move people out of chattel slavery, but also helped fight this in various ways. And so I think that like when we're talking about like civil rights, movement work, liberation, we really have to talk about all of the ways that people shared to mm-hmm. uplift this work.
Right.
And it just doesn't. It doesn't get the appropriate shine. And it also, when we just like highlight like just the boycott, right? And mm-hmm. folks was not taking the bus and not how it was funded. We sort of remove our own responsibility in modern times to uplift the entirety of the work.
Right.
Right. And that for me is always really fascinating, but is a call to action to be like, it's more than just a really powerful orator getting people excited.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot more than that.
Right. When you don't talk about how do you fund a movement, right? When you mm-hmm. don't talk about the people who were giving each other rides, because not too many folks had cars at that point, you know, cars were not an everybody thing at that point.
They still aren't.
Correct. This is very true. Especially as we're talking about going back to carless streets and so on and so forth, right? But those who had the how shared.
Yeah.
Those who had the ability to support in whatever way they could, did.
Mm-hmm.
And when you minimize that narrative, you disempower people
mm-hmm.
in their understanding of how they can be part of a movement, how they can be part of big change
mm-hmm.
by doing smaller things within their own communities.
Yeah.
Within their own neighborhood, right? Yeah. It's as simple as, you know, for some, hey, yeah, I can watch your kids, or I can walk your kids home from school with my kids, and so that you don't have to pay for childcare or pickup or whatever.
I think there's a lot more ways that we can share if we're really like slow down to think about it
mm-hmm.
and uplift. Like if we really want to be good stewards of history, if we really want to be good stewards of liberation, we have to like uplift the things, the less popular things and the things mm-hmm. that made the movements work, that made
right.
the things go. And that is like not only understanding history, but then uplifting the things that work. Because we yep. really are in the action part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Like 2025, we are in the action part of the story. So like, yes, regularly read. And the Black Panther Party taught us that you should read 2 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
I had a professor that once tried to tell me that I should read 200 pages a day. I'm gonna go with the 2 hours because 200 pages is like a whole book.
Yes, it is.
I tried that for a summer, and my roundabout way, because I will solve a problem, mm-hmm. was to read children's books. And
yep, yep.
I read my child. We just went to the library and was like, just get everything.
Yes,
and we read all the children's books because you could read 200 pages of children's book in about 2 hours.
Easy, yeah,
easy peasy.
Yeah.
Especially if there's ones with a lot of pictures.
Absolutely.
But yes, we should still be learning and reading, but that's not the bulk of where we're at anymore. Like, that was honestly back in the early 2000s when you should have been really hardcore in your reading adventure. And now we're definitely on the action part. And if we are going to be good stewards of liberation, we have to uplift a lot of the work, the actual...
Yeah.
The sharing of the resources, the going and talking at, you know, mm-hmm. testifying at city council or mm-hmm. our capital, the actually picking up garbage around our neighborhoods mm-hmm. or like finding our lane and being a regular participant.
Right.
Yeah. We aren't the action part of the story, everybody.
This is true.
Yeah. The action part that doesn't have to be bad though. Like,
mm-hmm.
I think that's the other part about when we're thinking about like movement work, liberation, civil rights. There was a lot of joy that happened within these spaces. We just don't, in the same way we don't talk about the mechanics of movements, mm-hmm. we also don't always talk about the joy. So like,
yeah,
I had somebody not too long ago, they said, well, it's just always so depressing about, you know, like volunteering and doing all this stuff. It's just not fun. And I was like, I'm offended, and because I was offended, and I was like, well, we have fun, like we'll listen to music, we crack jokes, we're laughing,
yeah.
like there, all of those things exist in this space, but because, to your point, like that's not how we talk about it, and we minimize the mechanics of how all mm-hmm. this works or what it looks like or feels like that individual had this negative connotation. I was like,
yeah.
It's literally all laugh and fun. I mean, it's work, but we're
yeah.
kicking it, like the garden project last year, like all of that was like laughing, joyful. There right. was a day at Miss Anita's garden, I laughed so hard my face hurt for 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Like literally my right. face hurt.
And that's part of being back in community, right? And sharing joy.
Yeah.
Like sharing in the work, sharing in the joy, sharing in the doing and sharing. Being and existing.
Sharing in the doing. I like that.
Yeah.
Share in the doing with us. We're doing the thing. Share in the doing yes. with us. We might have some new taglines at the end of this season for
hey,
sure.
Glad I could help.
Yeah. Are there any other like moments in history? I know we kind of like bopped all around that mm-hmm. had some like just things that you want to uplift and think about just from like a history perspective and the way that we're talking about movement work or just like that are part of the mechanics to make things work.
The first thing that comes to mind is listen. Is listen. Like there are so many answers out there being shared. Sometimes all you have to do is be still and listen and ask the question how or what. Right? Like part of action is learning.
Yeah. Facts.
Because if you don't learn, you might do the wrong action.
Yeah.
But, and it's like from a historical standpoint, like you were talking about the Black Panthers, and the thing that comes to mind is the breakfast program.
Whoop, whoop.
Right? The breakfast program that the Black Panthers put together. And that Portland actually, I believe, had the most successful breakfast program.
We had the most successful people's program.
Yes.
The free clinics, the yep. free, there was 2 free health clinics, the dental clinic, the breakfast program. There was food boxes.
Mm-hmm.
There were bail funds.
Yeah.
There were homework help.
Yeah.
And then there was just like, and then there was also the paper that they mm-hmm. worked on, and they sold the paper. So there was like all these,
yeah.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that, right, is because like just focusing in on those 4 programs where they were feeding the kids, right? That because they were doing the work and somebody else decided they didn't want them doing the work, the program expanded. right? Like, when you're looking at the number of children that were being fed healthy food, being lifted up, having all of their needs met in so many different ways, mm-hmm. right? Through everything that you just mentioned, the community.
And other stuff that's right. happening more quietly.
Right. All the community needs that were being met. Number one, what it looks like and the layers of commitment to that programming, the layers of commitment to the safety of that programming mm-hmm. and safety of community. And then looking at where, while it not credited, right, but we now have a free children's breakfast program in Portland.
Yeah. We also, the OHSU and Multnomah County health clinics are both
right.
existing because of the Black Panther Party of Portland.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, just looking at how putting the work in, like, even if somebody else decides to take it over because they want to do wrong, they don't want to see you succeed, fine. Still succeeding. Mm-hmm. Because the foundation was laid.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's also, speaking of our local chapter, I mean, that was funded by the community mm-hmm. across the color line, who said, mm-hmm. this is great. This is yeah. awesome. The free clinics were all, the doctors that were there yep. were all white doctors that brought their own supplies. Mm-hmm. They were showing up because they said, this is great. This is awesome. We like this. This,
yeah.
This is useful. This is wonderful for the community. We want to participate. And so, like, that's another example of, like, we across the color line, we do need class solidarity and we do need to be lifting up good work.
Yep.
I also like to, like, point this out for folks. Oregon is only 2.4% Black and, like, 4.5, maybe 5% Black in the city of Portland. And so what that looks like is there's 80,000 Black Oregonians and there's 36,000 Black folks in the Portland metro area. So not just Portland, because Portland only has 636,000 people here. I just looked mm-hmm. yesterday morning. unrelated to this podcast.
Portland proper.
I was like, oh, I thought we were a little bigger. No. So we're really a small community, right? Mm-hmm. And EGC feeds about 2,000 individuals a week through our food programming. That's 400 households and about 2,000 individuals. And so we as a community, right, we need class solidarity to help uplift us and to, you know, really see this change mm-hmm. And support. And we need our larger community to get really excited about funding and investing. The right. Black Panthers were not, you know, keeping all these spreadsheets about this is how much it was costing. I've talked to Mr. Ford about it a lot. He's usually like, didn't I already tell you this? Like, why is this the most important thing to you?
Right.
But it was because, you know, like, there were, you know, business owners and individuals yeah. that were like, this is what I can do. Let me give resources and really showing up. And that work was able to go and grow and, you know, impact the community in this really powerful way because lots of people poured into it. And mm-hmm. that is something I think that is a lesson that we really need to take to heart now that
yeah.
we need more people showing up. And not every single person that was excited, like a lot of people that were excited about the Black Panther Party, they were not rich individuals.
Right.
It was actually dangerous and hard, like was bringing, you know, scrutiny and drama to their front door by participating and caring about mm-hmm. this because just get in the weeds about history. But that was not a popular one. Black solidarity wasn't popular. And two, the Black Panthers were branded as this militant, you know, mm-hmm. these wackos with guns, which wasn't the case. But so it brought a lot of scrutiny for people who were trying to support in different kinds of ways. And so I think that people now need to kind of yeah. really, you know, tap in and pull up in a really intentional way and not be scared and to share in all the ways that we can, because if we uplift the Black community, if we uplift Black and Indigenous mm-hmm. people, we will be able to uplift the whole world
yeah.
To liberation. And And yeah, it's important that we look at history and not just like for talking points or quotes, but this is how we do it. And then we actually mm-hmm. do it because our ancestors' wildest dreams, liberation, and mm-hmm. we're not liberated yet. So we really, really have to do the work. Mm-hmm. And I have one of my ancestors' whole face, so I take that shit real serious. I do. My niece, my face twin, she also has the exact same face. And so I think mm-hmm. it is important that we are yep. very intentional, because those people, whether they're not made here in like physical form, they're still here in spirit, and we actually can still see mm-hmm. them.
Yep.
Yeah. Is there, as we're coming to the end of this, is there anything else around sharing that... and history that you want to give some wisdom to our dear listeners?
I don't know if it's necessarily history, but I think just, you know, what you said, showing up and the other half is going out, right? Like that's the other half of that saying for me and for what I was raised with, right? You mm-hmm. showing up and showing out.
Yeah.
Which means that you are not only going to be where you need to be to support folks, right? But you're going to do it beautifully, happily, joyfully, in celebration, mm-hmm. right? In true, like, let's do this. Let's be happy working on this together. Let us share in this joy, share in this work, and celebrate that we're here and able to do it.
Yeah, it's a blessing to be here and able to do mm-hmm. this work. It's an honor. And I think that more people, if we shifted that as part of the way that we talked about that, yeah. that this is an honor that we get to do this. This is that we're uplifting legacy work, yep. that we are being good living ancestors, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think about that a lot. Like, I want the people behind me to say, oh, Auntie AJ was great, not a menace, right? Right? Like, and I'm not perfect by any means. That's not going to happen. If you're looking for that from me, good luck to you. But right. it's really important that those coming behind me say, you know what? She really tried. She showed up and showed out and cared. Because that's what we need in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think so. And I think it's, you know, I made the comment about being about community kids. And for me, I was a community kid, not in the sense that I was always over at somebody's house, right? But I was one of those kids that felt loved, mm-hmm. loved on by community, mm-hmm. Going to places like the Black Education Center and learning mm-hmm. and having teachers and mentors and just feeling very loved by community, very educated by community. And that's all I can do is return that love. Mm-hmm. That's all I can do.
Yeah. I appreciate the debutantes. That was like a big motto when I was a debutante is mm-hmm. like, go learn, but then come back and give to this community, give back mm-hmm. to our community.
Yeah.
Give back to Black folks. Mm-hmm. Cause I do feel like, especially in capitalism, we sometimes struggle with that, but like,
yeah.
And that has always, not just like my upbringing and like other influences, but that's been a big thing for me. Like I've never been able to like separate or remove that from
right.
me. It's like permanently pinned yep. in my mind that it is my responsibility and it's an honor to come back yeah. and to give back and to uplift our community, this community that raised mm-hmm. us.
Yep.
This community, this legacy that we're a part of. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think one of the coolest things about being Black is it is a legacy of resiliency, of sharing, of beauty, of care. Mm-hmm. And that's not always how our community is talked about, but like that really is what it is. It's artful, it's joyful. Like my favorite memories as a kid is with my aunts. Like my aunt would and I would sing Whitney Houston together in front mm-hmm. of her fish tank that was our audience. Mm-hmm. Like every Saturday for hours.
Yes. Yes.
Joyful, right? Like, and when I think about our relationships and how we spend time together, it's yeah. all, it's rooted in joy.
Yep.
And it is important that we uplift that and give back to our community. And those that are down with Black folks, that care about liberation, that mm-hmm. are interested in righting wrongs, mm-hmm. please uplift the joy and share with our yes. community. Because it could happen in our lifetime that we see liberation. It really could. Like, mm-hmm. that's still on the table.
Yeah.
That is still on the table. I know things are like rough and raggedy, but liberation is never off the table, and it is our responsibility to continue to work and fight for it.
I agree.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate you coming and talking to me. I know you have lots and lots of things to do, including wrangling four beautiful beings.
Yeah.
So thank you for coming in and chatting and sharing your wisdom and your light with us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. I want to encourage everyone to that's listening to lean into history and learn. There's mm-hmm. tons of different ways. There's lots of great books. There's podcasts. There are documentaries. There's like whatever it's called when they make movies. It's not really a documentary, but it's like a, I don't know. I'm not
based
a movie person.
On the true based, story.
There we go. That talk to your elders, ask questions, talk to community members. Check out Keen's The Red Towers on Alberta. Check mm-hmm. out the walking tour. That is, both of those are all interactive history that you can grab a friend, get a, you know, get your little mug of coffee or whatever and take a stroll and learn. Check out Vanport Mosaic. They didn't ask for a shout out, but I absolutely adore them. Mm-hmm. They do a lot of really cool living history work, and so does the Oregon Black Pioneers. I'm sure there's some other folks. The Oregon Historical Society. They got some cool stuff over there.
They do.
They got some cool ladies that work there. Mm-hmm. They were my people when I was in college. I used to bring my toddler there and they'd be like, oh, this is different. Never kicked us out.
Hey, that's nice.
So shout out to them. But lean into history and learn. And then the call to action is to uplift the work. Don't just read about it and say that was cool. But to really... to be a good steward mm-hmm. of history is, and to uplift the work and to keep things moving, right? Yeah. Liberation's not here yet, so it's all of our responsibility to keep chipping away until we get there. All right. Well, thank you all for listening. This is another episode of The Sharing Culture, and we appreciate your time and energy, both you, Keen, and our audience.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Sharing Culture with Equitable Giving Circle. We appreciate you being on this journey with us. If you enjoyed what you heard, please like, subscribe, and comment. If you loved what you heard, please tap in and find us on socials under Equitable Giving Circle, or find us at our website, www.equitablegivingcircle.org, to donate, volunteer, or learn more about our programming. We look forward to working with you all to build a stronger and more connected and resourced Portland community. We do a lot of work at Equitable Giving Circle to uplift the Black community of Portland, and we are both proud and honored to do this work. We're also honored that many of our local business community shows up for us. A few of these awesome businesses that we'd like to uplift, in no set order, Realm Refillery, the eco-friendly grocery store on Northeast Broadway. It's a great shop to check out, and they've done a lot of work with us and for us, and we're really proud of them. Heart Coffee, who has been supporting our food program for years. They have delicious coffee. You can find them throughout town. And last but not least, Birds and Bees Nursery, who is in Southeast Portland. They have been uplifting our programming and plant sharing since the beginning of EGC. They're the best place to stock up on your garden supplies. We hope as you lean in and support our work at EGC that you also support the many local businesses around town that support us and our larger community.